This is VOA News by remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. As it looks to shore up the Mideast ceasefire, the U.S. is now vowing to help Palestinians rebuild Gaza after it was heavily damaged by Israeli airstrikes. AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
First in Jerusalem and then in the West Bank, Secretary of State Antony Blinken pledged the U.S. will help support Palestinians, not only through aid, but by restoring ties.
The United States will be moving forward with the process to reopen our consulate in Jerusalem.
The office had been in charge of diplomatic relations with Palestinians, but Donald Trump infuriated them by downgrading its operations. Blinken told Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu that they both must use the ceasefire to address underlying challenges to peace. Sagar Magani, Washington.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin will sit down for talks in Geneva on June 16th. This is amid sharp disputes over election interference, cyber attacks, human rights, and Ukraine. Both countries have lowered expectations for breakthroughs at the summit, with neither in a mood to make concessions or their many disagreements. The White House has avoided describing Biden as seeking a reset in relations with Putin, a term often used by former U.S. presidents as they sought to improve relations with Russia. The United States called on Tuesday for the setting up of a second phase of an investigation into the origins of the coronavirus, with international experts allowed to evaluate its source in the early days of the outbreak. U.S. Health Secretary Xavier Becerra said in a video message to the annual ministerial meeting of the World Health Organization, phase two of the COVID origin study must be launched with terms of reference that are transparent, science-based, and give international experts independence. This is VOA News. The European Union expects to have received more than a billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines by the end of September from four drug makers. That's according to a document presented to EU leaders Tuesday. The document, seen by Reuters and prepared by the European Commission, shows the EU is confident of having enough vaccines to immune its entire eligible population by that date, well beyond the initial goal of inoculating 70% of the adult population by the end of the summer. According to an inside source, a special grand jury has been impaneled to consider evidence surrounding former President Donald Trump's business dealings. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
The seating of a new special grand jury suggests that the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is moving towards seeking criminal charges stemming from its two-year investigation into matters like hush money payments to women on Donald Trump's behalf, property valuations, employee compensation, and other items that may have come to light from Trump's tax records. District Attorney Cyrus Vance had been using an investigative grand jury, but this new panel could be asked to consider returning indictments. The Washington Post reports the grand jury will meet 3 days a week for 6 months and will work on other cases besides the Trump investigation. I'm Jackie Quinn.
In Minneapolis and other cities in the U.S., crowds gathered to remember George Floyd 1 year after his death. AP correspondent.
It was a day for grief, smiles, and long moments of silence at events held to mark the 1 year anniversary since the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. Members of Floyd's family met with President Biden and Vice President Harris in Washington, D.C. While at an event in downtown Minneapolis, billed as a celebration of life, Floyd's sister Bridget explained why she chose not to accompany her family to Washington.
We don't want a watered-down bill, right, Ms. Guica? We want the bill that we want.
The Minneapolis celebration included music, food trucks, a bouncy house. But just hours before the festivities began, the intersection where Floyd died was disrupted by the sound of gunfire.
You've got to be careful here with some gunshots. Excuse me.
Police say they believe one man was injured in the shooting. I'm Jennifer King.
Tuesday was a big day for almost half a dozen members of the UN Security Council. They set foot in the chamber for a meeting for the first time. The ambassadors from the five countries elected to the council for 2-year terms starting January 1st got their first chance to sit in their chairs at the horseshoe-shaped council table Tuesday, so did Britain's new ambassador. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Thank you. morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 26th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. In Mali, there are calls to release the two highest officials of the interim government.
Baba Cisse, special advisor to Guaita, addressed the arrest Tuesday morning on Mali's national television station. Cisse said the new ministers were appointed without consulting Guaita, which he says is a violation of the transition charter.
Senegalese opposition say they know why authorities deny opposition leader Sonko permission to leave the country. Escalating insecurity in Nigeria appears to be strengthening separatist movements. Aid operation gets underway for survivors of the volcanic eruption in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And a Uganda military court releases on bail some supporters of opposition leader Bobi Wine.
This court finds merit in the application of the 14 applicants not objected by the respondent, plus the 4 applicants that need treatment. They are hereby granted bail.
And Turkey's presence in Libya comes under fire. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Mali's National Committee for Human Rights has joined calls for the release of interim President Ba Ondaw and Prime Minister Mokhtar Ouane. The military detained both men on Monday night after a government reshuffle in an apparent coup d'etat, the second in less than a year. And Risenbrook reports from Bamako.
Mali's transitional president and prime minister, who were installed after a coup d'etat ousted former President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita in August of 2020, remained in detention Tuesday in Kati, a military town outside of Bamako. President Ba Diaw and Prime Minister Mokhtar Ouane were arrested in the capital Monday night. The arrests, spearheaded by Assimi Goïta, the vice president of the transition, followed the naming of a new cabinet. Baba Cisse, special advisor to Goïta, addressed the arrest Tuesday morning on Mali's national television station, ORTM, via Reuters. In the broadcast, Cisse said the new ministers were appointed without consulting Guaita, which he says is a violation of the transition charter. Bamako remains calm, and Cisse called on citizens to continue their daily activities.
Le vice-président de la transition invite les populations à vaquer librement à leurs occupations.
The vice president of the transition invites the population to continue freely in their occupations, he says, and assures them of the unswerving engagement of security and defense forces to preserve the interests of the Malian people. This morning, activists gathered at the Bourse du Travail before being asked to disperse by police. They gathered to denounce the arrest of the president and prime minister.
Vive la République! Vive la démocratie!
Orotumu Cisse, a young activist, came out to voice her discontent at Mali's continued instability.
Pour quelle raison l'ont-ils fait?
Why are they doing this, she says. Either it's for personal reasons, it's not for the Malian people, and that we cannot accept. So this morning, we are here to show our discontent, and we will go until the end. Mali's National Committee for Human Rights, a governmental organization, has called for the release of Diaw and Ouane. The committee's president, Bouary Aghibou, explained via a messaging app from Bamako why they felt it was important to make this call. He says, this constitutes a detention and an arrest that is illegal. Illegal for the simple reason that it was not made in the framework of the law. He says, we have also learned that they are still in detention in Kati, which means they are in arbitrary detention. That is what brought us to publish this letter. The attempted coup comes during an ongoing general strike. Bokar Sangare, a Malian journalist in Bamako, spoke via a messaging application about the implications of more instability in a country that is already struggling on several fronts.
Parce qu'on sait que l'insécurité est en train maintenant de descendre.
We know that insecurity is going further south, he says, all the way to the Sikasso region, where the jihadists are installing themselves. So where we are in this country, this situation, in fact, risks to disturb a lot of people. It is unclear whether this attempted coup will delay the 2022 elections. The future remains uncertain for Mali. Annie Risenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
In Senegal, an ally of opposition leader Ousmane Sonko says she believes there are two justifications for the Senegalese government's decision to deny Sonko permission to leave the country. Sonko, a critic of President Macky Sall, was scheduled to travel to Togo's capital, Lomé, to attend an economic conference. Yassine Fall is a member of the Movement for the Defense of Democracy in Senegal and an ally of Sonko. She says one of the justifications for which Senegalese authorities do not want Sonko to travel is because Sonko supports the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS's plan to have its own currency called the ECO. However, Ms. Fall says France and other Francophone countries are against an independent ECO. Senegalese authorities were not immediately available for comment. Sonko also faces charges for alleged rape. Ms. Fall says Sonko is ready to have his day in court.
The opposition leader has been denied permission to travel to Lomé, Togo, where there is a discussion about the franc CFA and the fact that, you know, the Francophone countries under former French colonies are still using French money under the euro that has a very large impact on the economic and monetary health of the region. So we really feel like, you know, he has been denied travel for several factors. The justification doesn't hold because they are saying that because he's under judiciary control that he cannot travel. But we have been waiting for a court date to go to court and resolve this problem. If you are accusing someone of rape with two arms, pistols, threatening someone and raping someone, and the person who is being accused is saying, I want my day in court, why wait all this time? So we feel like it's two reasons. Number one, it's because you just want to do political intimidation and preventing them from having any capacity to, you know, travel to see other people from the sub-region and to talk. Number two is because also there is a very big attempt from the Francophone countries and France to stop the ECOWAS effort to have a monetary and a viable economic zone in the sub-region.
Yassine, let's talk about both of those issues. First, let's talk about the political justification. As you mentioned, Mr. Sonko is facing a legal challenge in court because of the alleged rape.
Yes.
So are you saying it's not because of that, or that's part of the reason they're not allowing him to leave the country? Because if you have a charge in court, unless you can justify it, you will not be able to flee. That's the only way the court can let you leave the country.
Of course, he has justified. His lawyers have justified that he can leave the country and come back. His family here, he has no tie whatsoever with foreign countries. He's in Senegal. He went to school in Senegal. He lives in Senegal. He's home in Senegal. All his family is in Senegal. His political party is in Senegal. They have justified. He doesn't have a bank account overseas. He has no tie outside that will make him be able to survive even 1 week overseas. His lawyers have explained that there is no justification for them to prevent him from traveling. The justice system in Senegal has to give him his day in court. We don't understand what they are waiting for. They want to buy time. And by buying time, they prevent him from traveling. They want to dirty his name by allegation of rapes. You cannot put the word rape on the back of someone and not give them their day in court. And it's all about the manipulation of the justice system. Because all of the decisions are in the hands of the government. Because the justice system in Senegal is not free.
You also said that Mr. Sonko is in favor of monetary independence for Senegal. And you think that President Macky Sall and France are against that. Do you have any proof that this is the case?
Of course I do. We have written about it. We have analyzed it. Mr. Sonko is one of the major leaders in West Africa that are saying that it is time for West Africa, Francophone West Africa, to have its own monetary independence. No country has seen one country in the world that has developed itself by using someone else's currency, tied to the former colonized, to the European Union currency. So this is a problem. Number two, we know that President Macron, despite all of what he's saying, has put a very clear strategy to stop ECOWAS countries from making their project of creating their ECO, which was the currency that they wanted to put forward, to make it alive. Because while they may have their meetings, made their statement and said that this is the new name of the new currency for the ECOWAS, why would President Macron come after that, right before they meet, and declare that now the CFA currency that was being used by Francophone countries is now named ECO, which is the name that ECOWAS has given to its new currency.
Yassine, it's so nice to talk with you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yacine Fall is a political ally of Senegalese opposition leader Ousmane Sonko. She was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. Escalating insecurity and communal violence in Nigeria appears to be strengthening separatist movements across the country, including the indigenous people of Biafra, a group that advocates for an independent state in a part of Nigeria that tried to break away more than 50 years ago. Timothy Obiezu has more from Abuja.
On a typical Sunday evening, 73-year-old former Biafran fighter Idei Obasi sits in front of his shanty home in a low-income housing area of Abuja and sniffs his snuff. He's grown popular in his area for often talking about his experience fighting the Biafran War in the late 1960s. He says he has renewed hope for an independent Biafra.
We used to say 2 weeks, no food. Only thing what they will give you, you carry your kit, come out with your water bottle, they full of mogogoro. You go there to fight. If you die, no concern anybody.
Obasi was only 20 years old in 1967 when the civil war started and he got recruited. The war lasted 3 years and the Biafran movement was defeated. He says many of his friends were killed fighting the Nigerian state, but he somehow survived. Today, he still supports secession but says fighting must be avoided.
Don't fight another war. Call children, we finish. If they can do it amicably and peacefully.
In January, the separatist group Indigenous People of Biafra, or IPOB, launched an armed security unit. The aim was to push back on Fulani herders who are often blamed for communal clashes in the region. But Nigerian authorities consider the unit as subversive. Troops have cracked down on the armed group in states where it is active. In 2017, the government banned IPOB's activities, which are led by British Nigerian activist Nnamdi Kanu. Some Nigerian political analysts, such as Jibrin Ibrahim, say IPOB's demands for independence are unlikely to succeed.
It's legitimate for them to make demands for separation. But the reality on the ground is that it's difficult for Nigeria to separate. We've been together for over a century. We have intermarried significantly. We have migrated extensively.
In recent months, a Yoruba separatist group has appeared, calling for the creation of an independent state known as the Oduduwa Republic. The republic would include the southwestern parts of the country, including Nigeria's economic capital, Lagos. Ibrahim says besides the insecurity, political marginalization is to blame for the rise of these separatist movements.
A lot of Nigerians are very dissatisfied with the political community we have. They feel it is not structured to serve their interests. They feel there are significant levels of marginalization that makes their citizenship ineffective.
Experts predict agitation by these movements will likely increase as the country heads towards elections in 2023. But they say the Nigerian government is unlikely to cede any power to the separatists, and a conflict will be too dangerous to pursue. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 26. A military court in Uganda has released 17 supporters of the opposition National Unity Platform, the NUP party, that were arrested last December during presidential campaigns. But opposition leaders and lawyers say they want the courts to release all their supporters and stop intimidating those opposed to the ruling party. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakariji has more from Kampala.
Military Court President Lieutenant General Andrew Guti Monday afternoon read the ruling to release supporters of Robert Chagurani, also known as Bobi Wine.
This court finds merit in the application of the 14 applicants not objected by the respondent, plus the 4 applicants that need treatment. They are hereby granted bail on the following terms.
The court says those released are restricted from traveling outside the capital Kampala without court permission, and they must report to the court every fortnight, among other conditions. However, the court did not release 18 others, including Chagrani's bodyguard Eddie Mutwe and Wayne's singing partner Ali Bokeni, commonly known as Nubian Lee. Anthony Wemeli is the lawyer for National Platform Party. He says they will continue to work towards attaining full rights of all suspects until they are released.
First of all, we want to have all of them out to begin with, at least for this temporary liberty that comes through a bail application. We have also filed a petition in the Constitutional Court challenging their trial in the court martial, and we're yet to receive a date for hearing of that constitutional petition.
Wamele also says they will sue the government for civil liabilities and damages for those supporters that could have allegedly been tortured by the state. Joel Senyon is the spokesperson for the National Unity Platform. He says the government should stop intimidating those opposed to it.
They are trying to persecute them. For example, yes, these ones have been released because obviously they didn't commit any offense. How about all the others that are still being held, Rubian Lee, Eddie Mutwe, and so on? They were part of the same team.
Sylvia Nambilu, the head of LapsNet, a local NGO which provides legal services to political and human rights victims, says every Ugandan has inherent rights to choose a party of his or her choice.
The work of political activism or belonging to a political party is lawful within the Constitution and all the other political party acts we name it. So it means that if party participates in elections and they subscribe to a political party, it is not a crime. It is just a conscience. However, the state has been using a coercive hand.
After the January presidential election, opposition leader Robert Chagrani released a list of more than 400 people that he claimed had been detained by security organs. Some of them have been released without charges. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakaninji in Kampala, Uganda.
Aid agencies are assessing the needs of tens of thousands of people affected by the eruption of the Mount Nyiragongo volcano in the city of Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Local authorities report 32 people were killed in the eruption, including 7 by lava and 5 others who were asphyxiated by gases. The UN Refugee Agency reports most of the thousands who fled on foot Saturday as lava flowed down on their towns have returned home. Their return is fraught with anxiety and uncertainty, as the full impact of the eruption is not yet known. However, UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshakov says the damage is likely to be extensive. He says that assessment is based on preliminary findings of an evaluation mission by aid agencies and the DRC government Sunday.
From the air, the eruption's path south of the volcano is clear. 2 villages on Goma's northern tip were destroyed, and 2 others were almost completely covered by lava. Our staff have heard testimonies from families who lost their homes and from others who lost children and other loved ones. Entire neighborhoods have been left without electricity and their fears of water shortages.
Mount Nyiragongo is one of the world's most active and dangerous volcanoes. It last erupted in 2002, killing 250 people and making more than 100,000 homeless. The lava flow from this present eruption stopped Sunday and has been followed by repeated earthquakes, prompting fears of new fissures opening up or another eruption. Cheshakov says agencies are rushing to help people displaced by this disaster. He says the Red Cross is leading an effort to reunite several hundred children who have been separated from their families. He says the UNHCR and partners are preparing to assist those in need of shelter and other humanitarian relief. However, he adds the operation is likely to run into difficulty because of blocked access roads.
The road leading to northern parts of North Kivu province is also damaged by lava, which will hamper the transport of food and goods to the area around Beni, where some 280,000 people displaced by conflict and insecurity since January 2021 rely on humanitarian aid.
Cheshakov says other access routes are cut off by closed borders since the coronavirus pandemic began. He says another problem hampering the aid effort is the lack of money. He notes the UNHCR has received only 17% of the more than $200 million it needs for its operations in DRC this year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
International pressure is growing on Turkey over its military presence in Libya. For VOA, Doreen Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkey deployed hundreds of soldiers and thousands of Syrian fighters in support of the Libyan Government of National Accord in its battle against forces of Libya's General Khalifa Haftar, who is backed by Russian and Sudanese mercenaries. Now, with a ceasefire in force and elections scheduled for December, Aya Bouwila, a visiting lecturer at the Hellenic National Defence College, says pressure is growing for all foreign troops to quit.
There's been two UN Security Council resolutions already calling for the removal of all foreign presence from Libya, be it Turkish, Russian, Sudanese. So yes, politically, the terrain has changed very much. There's been an increasing realization that the Turkey was building up its presence on the Mediterranean in Libya. So I think the EU, as well as the United States, had a rude awakening about Turkish intentions in Libya.
Ankara insists its forces are in Libya at the invitation of Libya's internationally recognized government. But this month, Libyan Foreign Minister Najah El Mangouch called for all foreign fighters to leave, including Turkish forces. Turkey has already established an airbase in Libya, and Turkish media says Ankara is now seeking to build a naval base. The growing Turkish military presence has drawn strong criticism from France, which observers say is increasingly competing with Turkey for regional influence. Analyst İlham Özgül, who writes for the Turkish news portal Duvar, says Ankara will likely have to, at least in part, heed to international pressure.
Turkey will definitely withdraw the jihadists or fighters that they carried all the way from Syria. Turkey can maintain a small number of liaison officers or something there, but not a combat force, not a tactical force, but Turkish military presence there is a very strong bargaining chip for Turkey.
A U.S. Defense Department report last year said Turkey sent thousands of paid Syrian fighters to Libya. Ankara denies any Syrian fighters deployed in Syria have links to jihadist groups. Turkey is currently seeking to improve relations with both Washington and the European Union, and Ankara sees cooperation on Libya as leverage. Turkish presidential adviser Mesut Çavuşoğlu says the government is ready to withdraw if all foreign forces pull out. However, he says the Turkish military can play a new important regional role in Libya.
Turkey did not want military influence in Libya. We don't need it. But Turkey and also European Union maybe work together. Why? The Turkey is aimed to support the Frontex European Union border security. This is not only for Turkey. Even though the Italy and also Malta support this situation.
Libya is one of the main jumping-off points for migrants seeking to enter the European Union illegally. And analysts say the Turkish leadership is looking to use its cooperation on border protection to its advantage in any future negotiations. Doreen Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
And that's it for this Wednesday, May 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a good day.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show.
designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.